Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did it change history? Good evening, and welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago. We give the movie a memory score and then re-watch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remembered. With me as ever, it's my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Gracious evening, Father.
And how are you this fine week?
Splendid.
Well, I'm delighted to hear that. Is there anything you would like to share with our listeners this week, sir?
Not at all.
Then, perhaps we should move on immediately.
Indeed.
That's new.
I thought about it earlier.
Let's move on immediately to our emails. We've had a lovely, lovely email from Chris, who is in Guildford in Surrey. Thank you very much for getting in touch with us, Chris. Chris says that he really is enjoying the podcast, and he particularly enjoyed the episode on Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium, which he agreed with completely. He said, you're absolutely right. People either get it or they don't, but I get it, and it's a 10 out of 10. So he agreed with, pretty much agreed with us. So that's good. And then Chris then asks us another question. He says, it's not relevant to the podcast, but if you had to select what you think is the best children's movie you've ever seen, what would it be?
Always a good question.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. That's a really good one.
I feel like my go-to answer, predictably, would be a Pixar film, because there's a lot of good ones. Or maybe Wallace and Gromit. But I think there's a rare few good kids' films out there. The one that I've come to mind might not be necessarily a kids' film, but it's a film that I absolutely love, and I think it's perfect, which I don't know if we can put on this list for the podcast, but it's perfect. And that's 1997's George of the Jungle. Nobody believes me when I say it's like a perfect film.
I don't remember it, but we should definitely rewatch it for this.
I think it's worth a rewatch every year.
We wouldn't have watched it together because 1997 is
that's a good point. Yeah,
far too early for you, but we could put it on this list. I would not have predicted that being your answer.
It's one of those films where you think there should be a joke, and it makes the joke. It doesn't miss a beat at all, and it's brilliant. I love it. I don't know why they got rid of Brendan Fraser for their second film. Don't watch the second film, but just watch the first.
I'm going to watch it. Okay, I'm going to watch it, and we can reference it next week. It is a good question. I think you're probably right with Pixar, if we're going sort of more modern. From my memory from childhood, mine would always be the first Willy Wonka movie.
Which is
1971. But I'm not sure it's a kids' movie, but it was a movie that was shown to kids.
Yeah,
because there's an awful lot of darkness in that movie.
There is.
So I think it really is quite
it's
dark.
Weird.
It is weirdly dark. But then the book is a bit weirdly dark as well. So I think I'm probably going to go with that. I think I am going to go with the Willy Wonka from 1971. Not because I think it's a kids' movie, but it's a movie I remember from when I was a kid, and it's a movie that continues to be shown to kids, and it is the best of all of the Roald Dahl films ever made, and particularly the Wonka ones as well. There's been some real shockers, but it's by far the best. So, that's a really good question. So we've gone with, astonishingly, George of the Jungle and Willy Wonka as our favourite kids' films.
One of those is a cinematic masterpiece.
And the other one is... Charlie the Chocolate Factory, right?
Yeah.
Sounds about right. So that brings us on to what arguably could be a kid's film, right?
Which is absolutely,
Monsters, Inc. I'm going to ask you my Monsters, Inc. question, okay? This is my first Monsters, Inc. question to kick us off. You ready?
Okay.
Okay, so if this was made in the UK, it would presumably be called Monsters Limited, right?
I never really thought about it, but yeah...
Okay, so then in the UK, then it would be Monsters LTD dot, because you and I both know that if you see LTD dot after a company's name, it means limited, right?
That's right, yeah.
So is Monsters Inc. actually called Monsters Incorporated, And everybody outside the United States of America has been calling it the wrong name forever because it says Monsters, Inc. Dot.
I don't know if I can answer that question, but I've never actually considered it. I think it's one of those things where as a kid I didn't even know what ink meant. But yeah, I didn't think of it. Probably is. That's true.
I even asked the internet. The internet didn't know.
Wow. You beat the internet.
I think if you're in America, and we do have listeners in America or North America, if you listen to this and we keep saying Monsters, Inc., they're like, well, it's Monsters Incorporated. But to everybody else in the rest of the world, it's Monsters, Inc. What a fabulous piece of irrelevance that first question was.
I like it, though. That's what you get on our podcast.
That's what you get. You don't get any film analysis here. You get questions like, is Inc. or Incorporated?
I also think the term monster is a very interesting joke.
let's talk about monsters. So, we went away. We watched Monsters, Inc. Operated. Close bracket. Oh, we're going to call it Monsters, Inc. in our podcast, right? So if you are listening to this in North America and you want to get in touch and say it's incorporated, fine. But we're going to call it Monsters, Inc.
I'm confused now.
Hashtag Monsters Inc. dot not incorporated. Close bracket. So we went away, we watched the movie, and I'm really interested in your kind of initial take on the rewatch. And I just want to preface that question because you were very young when we watched this movie and you've probably grown up with it. So you go away and you watch it as an adult. What's your first takeaway from the movie?
Well, as a quick recap for me, I gave it a 10 in the last episode because I loved it. And I think as an adult, maybe it wasn't a 10. I don't know. Does that spoil my score? Maybe. But I do you know what it is? It's one of those films that I think I can always enjoy. There is a slight asterisk to that, I think. But I did enjoy it this time around. Obviously, it's a childhood classic for me, I suppose. And I don't want to go into too much detail because obviously we need to stretch the podcast out as long as we can because otherwise it would just be 5 minutes of me saying, no, I liked it. But I think I see it differently as an adult than I did as a child, which is probably the most obvious thing that I've ever said.
No, I don't think it is because I was an adult when I watched it, arguably. I was certainly there was certainly a 3 in front of my age when I watched this movie for the first time. So that would be relatively adult. And now there's a much higher number in front of my age. The one thing, my first takeaway from the movie was this is very early in Pixar animation. Okay, yeah. It's really early. If you could sort of think 95, I think, is Toy Story. There's a couple of others in between. And actually, if you watch Toy Story 95 now, it's slightly dated by the technology.
Yeah.
But the first thing I noticed about this was it's incredibly well animated. So for animation that's now 23 years old, or at least 23 years old from time of release, probably actually 24, 25 years old, I thought the animation was amazing. What did you think?
I agree. I think it's from 1995's Toy Story to 2001's Monsters, Inc., brackets limited. Is that the joke?
It's not a joke. It's a good, genuine question. Monsters, Inc., open bracket, incorporated, close bracket.
I think the difference between animation styles and how it actually looks, they've come a long way. I can think of a few, not examples per se, but in Toy Story there's a lot of missing textures, I want to say, whereas in Monsters, Inc. you can see the textures, especially in Mike's skin tone's not quite the right thing, but you can see the age in his skin, and I think that's more comparable with Monsters University for sure. But I think you can see all that detail, whereas I think it was lacking that detail back in 1995. I mean, still not comparable either, but the humans in 1995 are nowhere near as good as the humans in the 2001 Monsters, Inc. Likewise with animals as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even things like Sully's fur, you know, you can see the... And I think there is a thing about that. I remember it from the...
That was one of my
DVD
points, actually.
Extras or whatever, is that you can tell that they've spent an awful lot of time on the fur. But I don't know whether this is peak Pixar animation. I don't know whether it gets... I'm sure the technology gets better. I'm sure it does. But yeah. I'm not sure that it gets better in the sense of pushing the boundaries of what you can do with the technology that you have. I think this might be peak Pixar for me. What do you think?
Wow. I don't know. I think there's a few movies just a little bit later on after this that I would put high up for me as well. But I do think as a kid, this was it for me. This was the Pixar movie. I mean, I love Toy Story, don't get me wrong. But Monsters, Inc. was always a very special place for me. And I don't really know what that was as an adult. I don't know if it's because they're sort of lovable monsters, really. And I do have a few points to come back to, but yeah, it's interesting, I think. Yeah.
You mentioned the lovable monsters thing. The other thing that struck me about the movie is that it's a movie essentially about monsters, and all of the monsters have the capacity to be quite frightening when they're frightening, but when they're not frightening. When they're not frightening, they're not frightening. And that's actually, but that sounds really stupid. But actually, my point is that if you are 4, 5, 6 years old and you're watching this film, there might be a little jump scare every now and again. But ultimately, you're going to kind of fall in love with these monsters who are cute in every way. But actually, they don't ever lose the sense of being monsters. I have explained that really badly, but do you know what I mean?
No, I think it makes perfect sense, actually. All of what you've said, funny enough, we're on the same page. I agree where it's the concept that it's in the world, it's something scary, but to the audience, it's not. Or it could be to a younger audience, but the idea and the concept of the film is that you don't have to be scared of these things for it to work, and you can just enjoy it. And that's, maybe it's about getting over your fears in a way and just learning to enjoy things. Maybe that's the point of them laughing at the end of it. But I don't know, maybe I've gone too deep now.
Well, I mean, I don't think so, because if you think about how hard do you have to work as an animator, a designer, a sort of character designer, to create a monster that's going to be appealing to a 4 or 5 year old, and work, you know, you have to work pretty hard on that.
I wonder actually what the sort of design process was for that sort of thing, for the monsters specifically, because I know, back to Toy Story again, the original concept art and the movie itself weren't very kid friendly at all, and it was a bit frightening, and I don't want to say too realistic, but the Woody puppet wasn't the lovable toy that you see. So I wonder if at some stages the monsters were a bit too, yeah, we can't show this to kids, we have to cool it down a bit. But in that sense, they also have to keep the idea of a monster. And I think it worked, design-wise.
I think so as well. I think it's really well designed. And I think there probably are better animated Pixar movies after this. But yeah. I still think this is peak Pixar, in the fact that they're really pushing the envelope at this point and stretching the technology for all of its worth. I mean, there was nothing like it in 2001. And so then by the time you get onto things like WALL-E, and which is arguably better animated, and some of the other ones that came later, they've already nailed the technology at that point.
No, there's no envelope. Agree, yeah.
Maybe there's no envelope left to push. Anyway, that's just my take on it. It's a small cast, but it's a good cast. Do you have any comment on the cast?
I think it's a very grown-up cast, isn't it, with the voices of Sully and Mike. But I think that's another thing where it's sort of, you wouldn't expect them to be in a kid's film, but here they are, and their voices work perfectly for it. So I think it's perfectly cast, and I don't think there's anyone who shouldn't be there. But I always just like it that every time I see John Goodman, I always think, that's Sully. And to me, he's always just been Sully. I think he was in Kong Skull Island, and I'm like, oh, there's Sully. Or even 10 Cloverfield Lane, which I haven't seen.
Yeah.
But there's Sully. And it's bizarre to me. He is just the voice of Sully. How many times did I say Sully?
7.
Wow. Take a shot every time I say Sully.
Maybe not. Sully, drink. There was a fashion, wasn't there, sort of through the 90s and then presumably then into the early noughties, particularly for Disney and therefore Pixar, I think, that if they were casting a movie, they would cast a voice, a proper actor in that voice. It kind of starts, I think it probably starts with someone like Robin Williams in Aladdin from sort of mid-90s, perhaps even the early 90s. But they would always do that thing. So then you get into Toy Story and you've got Tom Hanks and Tim Allen. And in this you get John Goodman, Billy Crystal. And it's got Steve Buscemi in it. I had no memory of Steve Buscemi being in this movie.
I think I did as well. I think that's another one where I hear his voice and think, that's Randall. Yeah.
Yeah. And James Coburn, you know the actor James Coburn, the man's a legend, you know. He was he was this kind of early years of Hollywood actor. He made hundreds of films and he's in this movie. Actually, one of the last movies he ever made.
That's right. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. And then it just, the list kind of goes on. You've got John Ratzenberger who reappears. He's the guy from Toy Story.
Frank Oz is
in it and so on. It's a relatively small cast, but what a good job they were doing. And I think you're right. I think if you hear the voice of John Goodman, whatever he's doing, you think, Sully, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's what it is for me.
maybe less so Billy Crystal, but definitely Sully. It's very hard to judge whether or not they've done a good job as actors in inverted commas, but they're thoroughly believable in those characters, right?
Yeah, I think there's always that line that you can draw, especially when, you know, it's just a man standing in a sound booth reading some lines. But I think they bring the characters to life in a way that is so believable that it's convincing, and they're funny. You get emotional when they're emotional, and it just works for me. I feel like if it was anybody else, it might not work the same way, but for the cast that it's got, I'm happy with it.
Yep, I agree. And then you've got the introduction of Mary Gibbs as Boo.
Yeah. Has she done probably anything else since?
I actually don't know. I don't think she has, no. Let's have a look. Filmography, I'm just doing it now. She is apparently... I don't think she's done anything else. Nope. There you go. Interesting fact, though, she's now nearly 30 years old.
Oh, wow. Do you reckon she can still do the voice?
Probably. Do you know how they recorded her, or am I going to get in the way of one of your facts from later on?
No, how did they do it?
So basically, they couldn't get her to stand in the recording booth. That was too complicated. So they just gave her a pile of toys and let her play and recorded her as she was playing. And so the sounds that she was making as a 2 or 3 year old is what ended up in the film. So there's no dialogue there apart from the odd word when they make her say kitty and boo and things, which apparently is just a loop over and over again.
Okay.
But the sounds that she makes are just the sound of the actor just repeating playing with toys, which I think is quite a nice touch.
Yeah, I did see that in order to get her to do like little laughs and things like that, the director would show puppets, which would apparently work. So that's cool.
Yeah, interesting. Well, that's all we have to say about this movie.
It's kind of going back to what you said earlier, and I don't think this is as accurate as I wanted it to be because I've read the trivia instead, but I wanted to leave it as I had known. Sully has force fields. Pause for effect.
Sully has force fields.
Yeah, so during the animation process behind all the works and things like that, Oliver's fur that they'd animated kept on spiking out and just shooting all over the place. So what they did was they invented little force fields. There's probably a more technical term for it, but that prevent the fur from shooting all over the place. And I just like to think when I'm watching it, Sully has force fields all around him.
I did not know that. That's cool.
Bit of random trivia.
Yeah, Sully has a force field all the way around him. One of a thing that I do like about the Pixar movies is that if you are an adult and you go to watch it with a child, there's enough in it for the adult in the room to be entertained. If that's the that's not, definitely not the right word, but even things like there's like little Easter eggs. So my favorite one, there's two actually. One is the fact that the fancy restaurant that they go to is called Harryhausen's.
Yeah.
And Harryhausen, of course, is Ray Harryhausen, the famous monster animator.
It took me a few years to get that one.
But I love that. And then there's one where it's actually a scene in the restaurant where they show a menu and you can pause it and then read what's on the menu. And it's just,
I didn't see that.
Just the sort of attention to detail, and they're kind of what you'd call monster meals. And I don't remember what they are. But there's just really cool little bits of detail like that, which are just really entertaining. And then you've got all the stuff that's happening at home where they're getting up from work and the news is on and stuff like that. And that's funny. So there's enough in it if you're a grown-up person watching this with a child to not just kind of switch off and do nothing. You know, you're sort of engaged in the movie. And I think that's what Pixar do very, very well.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I think that's just a staple of Pixar, just being so inclusive to the adults that are going to be watching these films with their kids all the time. Little things for them to notice, I suppose,
And then just go deeper and deeper into it. And then there's like things, you know, other toys appear and things. So if you go in the bedroom, there's like little references to other Pixar movies from all the toys that are lying around and things, which is great. It's really good. I like that.
Is this one of those instances where they put a reference in to a film that hasn't come out yet? Because I'm sure there's a Jessie doll, but was that out? Was Toy Story 2 a thing?
I don't think it was. I think you might be right.
I could be wrong again, but I think Lotso shows up in Up, and Up hasn't come, and sorry, Toy Story 3 hasn't come out at that point, but I could be wrong.
No, Toy Story 2 is 1999, and this is 2001. Oh, okay.
So it has
come out, and Jessie is in it. But I did see Jessie, and I did see the ball and things like that. And so
Nemo
it's great. Nemo was cool as well. So Nemo had presumably come out at this point as well.
No, it hadn't actually. 2003. That's what it is.
Okay, and that's a future reference. These things, these movies do take a long time to make as well, right?
So
there'll be a Pixar team somewhere working on this. Meanwhile, there's a Pixar team somewhere else working on Nemo. The conception of this film begins in 1996. So the year after they've done Toy Story, this is the film that comes out.
Wow.
And so you've got kind of 5 years later, the film certainly comes to fruition, if you like. So it takes 5 years to put together. I always ask you the question about Academy Awards. I'm going to jump in here with my Academy Award question. And there's a reason why I'm jumping in with my Academy Award question seemingly quite early in our discussion, because I want to bring it on to another point. But first question then, was it nominated for any Academy Awards? Oscars, what do you think?
I know it was nominated for one, but I don't know if there was any more than one.
So it was nominated for two. Okay.
Okay.
And it was nominated for Best Original Song, If I Didn't Have You, and it was nominated for Best Animated Feature. Okay.
Okay.
So it won the Oscar for Best Original Song.
That's the one I knew.
And it was Randy Newman's first Oscar. Okay.
Wow.
Do you know how many times he'd been nominated for an Oscar prior to winning this?
3 or 4, maybe?
It's 15.
Wow.
So Randy Newman had been nominated for an Oscar 15 times before he won with this.
I think it's a good one to win for, but it's a shame that it took that long.
It's extraordinary that it took that long, particularly when you've got the songs from Toy Story as well.
Yeah.
It was also nominated, of course, for Best Animated Feature, but it didn't win. And do you know which film it lost to? Or rather, the film that won?
Oh, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I bet I know what it is, but not off the top of my head.
I should also add that it was also nominated for Best Original Score and Best Sound Editing, but didn't win those either. So it won Best Song and was nominated for 3 others. So the film it lost to in 2001 was Shrek.
Oh, okay. That makes sense, yeah. I'll allow
This leads me to my question, which I was quite surprised to discover that, because I think this is quite significantly better than Shrek. I just wondered if you had a view on that. I also wondered then why Shrek wasn't on our list of movies to watch, because we obviously saw it.
Yeah, true. I'm going to get loads of internet hate for saying this, but I don't think Shrek is as good as people think. I think I prefer Shrek 2 over Shrek 1, but I think if you gave me the option of watching Monsters, Inc. or Shrek, I'm going to choose Monsters, Inc., because I think I just prefer it, and I think Maybe the problem is that Shrek's now been done to life by, done to life, done to death by memes, and maybe that would just ruin it for me now to watch it and not see it as good as everyone else would. So I would always pick Monsters, Inc.
The reason why I sort of brought that up and sort of built it up in the way that I did, I think this movie is miles better than Shrek.
Yeah, I mean, even just in terms of animation.
Shrek's pretty funny, you know, the Mike Myers, Eddie Murphy thing, that works really well in Shrek, and this is not a podcast about Shrek, it's about Monsters, Inc. My point is, though, I mean, I can understand why it won, but objectively, 20-odd years later, Monsters, Inc. is I mean, it's not even in the same league, it's miles better.
And I also think, whilst it's not a sequel, I think Monsters University is still better to continue the story than any of the other Shrek films.
I can't comment on that. I have never seen Monsters University.
I think that is probably the Pixar film that I love more than Monsters, Inc. I think Monsters University is a great film. And I know people complain because they wanted to see a direct sequel, but I think the prequel works so well. Actually, there's a thing in this in Monsters, Inc. that doesn't make sense anymore because of the prequel. I think it's something like either Mike or Sully says to the other that they met in fourth grade or they did something in fourth grade, whereas according to Monsters University, they don't meet until university. But that's,
Right.
yeah, never mind.
In these inconsistencies, damn it. This is what happens when you go
Yeah.
back and tell a story and you haven't read the original script. Who are
It's
these
time
people?
travel.
Time travel, that's what it is.
I think one thing that really stands out to me about this film and that I've always like enjoyed about it and is something that is in my memory are the colors. And I think more specifically the colors of Mike and Sully. I always, anytime I see the color blue and purple, I immediately think of Sully. And I've got a lot of recollection apparently towards Sully. But it's such an iconic pairing of colours that that's just what I associate it with. And even Mike's green, I mean, I don't see that one everywhere as much, but I do enjoy it. And I think a film like this for kids and maybe adults, it's very good to have all of that colour. And I think it sort of catches the eye quite well. This feels like way more of an analysis than it should be. But it is just something that I've always enjoyed about it as a kid and as an adult.
Everything you said is absolutely right. The color palette for this movie is fantastic. It's really
Yeah.
good, and you're right that it's going back to that thing that these are monsters and they're terrifying, but actually they're not scary at all. So the color choice for Sully is fantastic. Even the sort of green apple one eye monster that is Mike, that works well. But that overall, you're right, the color palette of the movie is amazing. Even down to the factory and the doors, you know, all of
Yeah.
that stuff is really, really good. So yeah, I was gonna, there's a, maybe you can help me with this. I'm sure there's another Pixar movie, or there is a movie somewhere where there's a rug which is the same color as Sully, and every time you see it you think, oh, that's Sully the rug. Maybe that's a, maybe it's an
Yeah.
internet meme. Is it an internet meme that I'm thinking of?
I don't know. I know what you're talking about, but I can't think of what it is. But I know, obviously, the idea is that all these Pixar movies are connected anyway. So maybe it is actually another Pixar movie. I might have a look.
Yeah, I think it might be like, I think it might actually, I don't know whether it's a, it might even be an internet meme where there's just a, where it's just a rug that it's the same color as Sully, but it's instantly, my point is, it's instantly recognizable, those two colors
Yeah.
as Sully.
There is a rug in shops, apparently. But there's a, I think there's a Toy Story short, and the cover on the toilet seat is Sully, like the colors of Sully. That's what it is,
Right.
according
Okay.
to the
Cool.
interweb.
If it's on the internet, it must be true. You were heavily into the toys that came from Monsters, Inc. And there's a cynic in me that says some of these movies being made by Pixar are specifically designed to be able to sell toys.
Yeah.
Am I being too cynical? I mean, one of them's even called Toy
I
Story.
was gonna say, a movie called Toy Story, is that designed to sell toys or
Is
stories?
it too cynical to make the to kind of make the point that these movies were so heavily marketed and also so heavily sold as merchandise that that kind of does it a little bit of it kind of maybe would lose half a mark for it just being so cynical? Or am I being too harsh on it?
I don't know. I think maybe that's the parent side of it coming out, where you just are watching this film. I know I'm gonna have to buy this, this, and this. But I suppose it is a thing. I don't know if they, as a team of animators, do you think they sit down and go, okay, what will sell toys? Or do you think they just create these characters and eventually go, oh, that would make a good toy? Because I think as well, another thing is, toys are very gimmicky. I think I had like a glow in the, not glow in the dark, but like a color change and heat Randall thing, so he would look different if you warmed him up, or a Mike Wazowski where you could move the eyelid, which I remember the texture of, oddly enough, which is a weird side note. But I don't know, maybe they do originally, but then the gimmicks is what actually sells the toy.
Maybe that's true, and maybe it is the parent in me that comes out here, but I have genuine memories of sort of chasing toys around birthday times, Christmas times, occasion times. And I could give you four or five examples of, you know, I must find this toy, and, you know, getting in the car and driving to Leeds because I've ordered it from Toys R Us in Leeds, and you must have it for Christmas. What the by the way, the Leeds anecdote is for, and the irony is I can't remember what the toy is. I remember the film. It's the Toy Story 3. It's a pink bear. Is it?
I think I know what you're talking about. It's Lotso. I was just thinking of the same story, though.
And so we had to get one. There was one that there were, you could get lots of different ones, but there was one that if you squeezed him, he would snore or something. There was some movement that was involved.
He'd smell of strawberries.
That's the one. And they were incredibly hard to get hold of. And I found one in Toys R Us in Leeds. And I drove to Leeds, which is like a 2-hour drive from where we were living, and then back up. So either you or your sister could have the Lotso bear for Christmas.
That's where I remember the story differently.
Maybe I've exaggerated it over the years for effect. I don't remember.
Yeah. I don't know about Leeds. That was kept a secret from me if it's true. But that Lotso was actually for you, and I got a different, cheaper version. But the whole surprise was that you opened it on Christmas instead.
It's possible. I'll allow it.
It makes no difference because I got it in the end.
Yeah, I don't know. It's possibly true that I drove all the way to Leeds for a Lotso 11 bear for myself. That's possibly true.
But you didn't know it was for you, though.
That's not how. But I've got three or four of these kind of anecdotes. It starts with the Teletubbies, and then it goes through Wallace and Gromit, and then and then there's there's loads. And he just anyway. And so my point is that, you know, I do think that the cynic in me says, let's make these things, let's not make quite enough of them, because that demand is sort of building the demand for the movie.
It's quite funny actually to think that Toy Story 3 invented a bear that smelt of strawberries, but they didn't have the technology in 2001 to make a Sully that smelt of wet dog. You could do it easily, but you know.
Well, I'm sure many of them did over time. So do you have any out of Sam's out of pocket takes for Toy Story?
Yes and no. I've got some trivia.
Interesting. Oh, trivia is always good.
Well, I'm going to call this one my out of pocket take, although it isn't from me directly, but that's the point, really. I think somewhere along the last, since the last episode, some algorithm picked up that I said that I loved Monsters, Inc. So for the past week, I've only ever had Monsters, Inc. things pop up, which is weird. But one thing that I found, and I'm going to have to summarize it a bit as it's said, but apparently, what is it? The name Sullivan means one eye. So people are like, well, why did you call the guy with two eyes Sullivan? But then it goes even further, and apparently the name James, I'll read it from the thing, is a classic boy's name derived from the Hebrew name Jacob, and it means supplanter, one who follows. So really, Sully's name is one who follows one eye, or Mike's sidekick.
That's amazing.
I love that fact.
I
don't know if they did it on purpose, but it's weird if they didn't.
That's very cool. So James Sullivan means one who follows the person with one eye.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
That's fantastic.
But it's also interesting to think of, like, maybe Mike is the main character and Sully is just the sidekick.
Well, that is a good question, actually.
Definitely in The prequel, I would say.
It is a very, very good question, actually, whether or not who is the main character. What do you think? Is it Mike? Is it Sully?
I'm going to be honest, I think it's Sully, but you know, same goes.
Yeah, I think it probably is. There was a really interesting thing, and I was going to mention this, and I forgot, so I'll do it now while we're in the kind of trivia casty things. This was one of the rare movies, apparently, where all of the scenes that were recorded between John Goodman and Billy Crystal were done with the two actors in the same room together.
Ah, yeah, that's right.
Which apparently is incredibly rare when you're making an animated movie. So, and I think that really helps. I think you can really tell that they had a bit of a thing.
Yeah. Kind
of a really good rapport going on.
I like it when they do that, to be honest.
That's a good take. I think that's a take worth repeating, just in case you sort of switched off during our podcast, inevitably. That James Sullivan means one who follows, person with one eye.
Yeah.
I love it. I love that. That's fantastic.
So thanks for listening. Well, it's my time to make the joke.
I think that is peak analysis right there, don't you?
Yeah. See, now I'm going to go to some trivia that's just not quite as interesting.
I'm sure it is, but keep going.
There's one that we've already sort of mentioned about. The character of Boo's real name is also Mary, which is shown briefly, but that's because she's named after Mary Gibbs, who voiced her.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, which I never would have noticed this, but all of the names on the scoreboard for the scaring contest are the names of Pixar staff members, which is a nice little cameo, I suppose.
They're so good at that, Pixar, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think one of the strengths of Pixar was that it sort of begins as this fairly small computer animation company. It then gets bought out by the giant that is Disney, and Disney are on a roll at this point. They've had some really big hits in the 90s, so it's bought out by Disney, and which, you know, is inevitable at some point. Everybody gets bought out by Disney eventually, right?
Spoilers.
But actually, throughout all of this, they never lost their identity as kind of I don't even know how you describe it, kind of I don't want to use the phrase movie geeks, but you know what I mean? They never lost their identity as this kind of still relatively small independent animator that was just having fun all the time.
Which is nice, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah. Disney buys out everybody.
Yeah, the Benefit of Hindsight podcast brought to you by Disney.
By Disney. It's literally a matter of time. If we think about all the things that you and I like, you like the MCU. We both like the MCU, yeah?
Yeah.
Owned by Disney.
I know.
We both like Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
Owned by Disney.
Unfortunately.
Since childhood, I've been a fan of the rock band Queen, who in North America are owned by Disney. Or were until
that.
Very recently.
Oh, okay.
Till very recently, they just sold their catalog to Sony. A different conversation. Mm. But until very recently, had been Disney for years. Disney has taken over the world.
Is it even like 20th Century Fox now?
Disney.
Yeah. I know in America, I don't know about anywhere else, Smallville, which is a DC show, is on Disney Plus.
There we are.
Complete sidetrack. My last bit of trivia is a bit of one of those, I don't want to say it's directly a Mandela effect, although I don't know how to define that. So do you know what a Mandela effect is?
I do know what the Mandela effect is.
Okay,
yes.
Do you want to explain what that is? Because I'm dumb. I know what it is, but I can't explain it.
Okay, I'm going to give you my Mandela effect. This will be the second time I've referenced the world's greatest rock band, Queen, in this podcast. So apologies if you're not a fan of Queen. The last line of the song "We Are the Champions" is what? Most people are going to say. Of the world. We
That's what
are
I was
the champions
of
the world. It isn't. That's not in it. It simply stops with, we are the champions. We are the champions. And it stops on, we are the champions. There is no of the world at the end of the song. And yet, if you ask anybody what it is, they'll say, oh, it ends with of the world. Really long held out by Fred. Nope, it's not it. On the record, that's not what happens. And that's the Mandela effect.
I was going to say that, funny enough. Yeah. my Mandela effect is about Monsters, Inc.
Okay, let's hear yours. I like this.
When they leave the house to go to work and they have the conversation about not taking Mike's car, I remember them actually showing Mike's car, but apparently it's the spin-off, the short film Mike's New Car. But it was apparently planned to be a scene in the film, but it was removed, which also means that it was the first short to have dialogue. But I always remembered it being there, and I don't know how that is.
I can't say I noticed that. I do know the short, Mike's New Car.
Yeah. Another one as well is, I remember the credits having the bloopers. So I was waiting for the bloopers the whole time, but the credits didn't show them. But the bloopers do exist for Monsters, Inc. somewhere.
Yeah, that's definitely one that I remember. I was waiting for the bloopers. I was actually looking forward to them. That had been a thing throughout
Maybe
Pixar
I'm just
movies.
Thinking of Toy Story 2.
Well, there's also bloopers in Bug's Life as well.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, but not in this. I was also waiting for the outtakes, and we didn't get them. We always do the box office. So the film cost $115 million to make. It's quite a lot
wow.
for
that, is a
that,
lot,
that time. And box office, what do you think? Ballpark figure?
20,000.
Well, you've nailed it. It was actually less than I thought. Okay, because you think about. So of course it made an awful lot. It made $579 million on a budget of $115 million. So it's done well. It's been profitable. And you know, it had the biggest opening weekend of any animated film until Finding Nemo. Ooh. So it beat Toy Story, and then lost to Finding Nemo. And it just had this in. So, but it just felt like that. It felt like didn't feel like that was a lot. If you'd said a billion, I'd have said yeah, okay, that makes sense. But no, they're just meaningless. These numbers, though, aren't they? When you're in movie making terms, you spend $115 million on a movie that makes $579 million. At the time, actually, it was the second highest grossing animated film of all time.
Wow. That's pretty
until it was overtaken. Until it was overtaken by Finding Nemo later on. Can you guess then? Okay, this is the question. It was the second highest grossing movie of all time. Here's my two trivia questions for you. Which movie did it overtake to move into second place? And which movie was in first place?
I don't know. See, I feel like I would have said Shrek, but I feel like they came out so close together that it wasn't going to be Shrek.
Yeah, this made more money than Shrek, actually. It was more profitable than Shrek.
Good. I can't really think of any other movies that would have come out around about the same time to do that. What are they?
Okay, so it overtook Aladdin.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and was second behind the 1994 classic, The Lion King.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Yeah, so fair again, enough. Disney taking over the world.
Yeah, even at such an early age.
One of my favourite things about this movie is there are certain movies in kind of our history, our relationship of going to the movies together that resonate. So I'll never forget Wallace and Gromit, and possibly there'll be other things as well. But this is definitely one that I remember taking you as a child to the cinema to watch. And so, wow. So this movie will always have kind of a bit of a place in my heart. And it was a thing. You wanted all the toys. We watched it. The video or DVD, whatever it was that came out, we watched it again.
I've actually still got the DVD. It was a DVD and I've still got it.
It was a movie that was important to you and therefore important to me. So I just wanted to mention that, you know, we can be all kind of silly and things, but some of these movies have a real kind of emotional connection, and this is definitely one of them.
Nice, that's cool. I like that. Speaking of emotional connections, and I mentioned this last episode about the sweets that... Well, there's a lot of tie-ins with these. They had Cinnamon Grahams that were tie-ins with this, where the little Cinnamon Grahams had Sully and Mike printed on them. I don't know if there's an American equivalent, but they're now called Curiously Cinnamon, which just isn't quite the same.
It's not the same, is it? In America,
No.
they were called Cinnamon Grahams alongside what were called Golden Grahams. So that's the
That's
American
right,
name,
yeah.
and then presumably changed for the UK market into Curiously Cinnamon. Well,
That's wrong.
why curious?
I hear they did the same thing about marrows and melons. It's weird.
Yeah, they did, yeah. Hashtag Team Marrow. Let's never forget that.
So there's the cereal, but there was also the sweets, and I remember exactly what they looked like and how they tasted, but on the internet there is no recollection of these sweets ever existing. But they did, and there's no way of knowing. Like, I can go on to eBay and things like that and find everything else for Monsters, Inc., but not that.
Maybe that's another one of those Mandela effect things. Maybe they never existed.
Well, they
Maybe it's a
definitely
false
existed,
memory.
though. I remember I was eating them in a shop. We'd bought them in town, and I was eating them in a shop. I remember that exact moment for some reason. I'm the only one
And
who remembers.
what were the sweets?
They were in a small packet which had a character on them. I think it was Mike for this packet specifically. And they were just normal sweets with the sort of gooey jelly inside, so they sort of popped when you ate them. A bit like randoms that you'd get now. But just that was just the sweet.
I think I might remember those, but yeah,
Are you just
interesting.
saying that? Because I
No,
need someone
I
else to
think
remember.
no. I you might actually be right, but I've just asked the internet to show me Monsters, Inc. sweets, and there's nothing at all like what you've just described.
It's almost as if it was just removed from history.
Well, you see, I have a theory. I think some things probably are. I think I'm the only person alive that remembers a children's television program called The Barber Papas. So if you've ever heard of The Barber Papas, please do contact this podcast because I think I might be the only person alive that remembers that. And you're the only person alive that remembers Monsters, Inc. candies. It's a
Yeah, please let me
conspiracy.
know.
So if we'll put a plea out here. Look, if you've ever thought of emailing us about anything, this is the one. Is there such a thing as Barber Papas children's television series from the 1970s and Monsters, Inc. candies, presumably from the early 2000s? Please help us.
So my last point that I want to make about the memory of this film. When we did this first Spider-Man podcast, I showed you the picture of me as Spider-Man in the little suit. When I was looking for that picture, I came across a book from when I was a kid where we made, it's like a scrapbook of sort of kid things for Sam. And I'm sure one of them might have been a picture of me dressed as Mike Wazowski. But very specifically, I remember seeing in that book, so I've still got it, the ticket for the cinema to see Monsters, Inc. I still have that ticket.
Wow.
I wish I'd remembered that beforehand and brought it and was like, here's the ticket. But it's a podcast, so you can't see it anyway. But yeah, I still have that ticket.
Wow, that's 23 years old.
It belongs in a museum.
That belongs in a museum.
Maybe not a
That's a
very
line
good
from a
museum.
movie. Yeah, not a very good one. Sam's Museum of Movies.
Yeah.
Actually, I do remember the picture of you dressed as Mike Wazowski. I can literally, if you showed me that picture now, it would be exactly what I can see in my head.
I'm sure it was taken in Banbury as well.
It's possible.
Because I also remember wearing it and eating some very specific cookies that I also remember the taste of. If you've ever had a cookie before, let me know because no one remembers.
So,
That joke's
okay,
funny, but I don't know if I can edit the whole sweets thing
let's
again.
good luck with that. Let's move on to our scores for Monsters, Inc. Okay, I'm going to go to you first. You gave it a 10, right?
I
I was,
did.
which is bold. We've had a good chat about the movie. No massive analysis, but I've enjoyed the chat. Is it still a 10? Talk me through your score.
I think as a memory score, it's still a 10. As a rewatch score, not quite. I think I enjoyed it a lot as a kid, as you do as a kid. But I think I've still got such a close connection to the characters, the colours, the sweets, and all the memories of just the film in general. So that's why it would stay as a 10 for the memory. As a rewatch as an adult, I'm going to put it at an 8 out of 10. I know it's not much of a difference or a change. I like it enough not to go any lower, but I don't think it's any higher than an 8 for me personally as a rewatch score.
Okay, that's very interesting because I gave it 8 and I gave it an 8 really based on your fondness of it.
Okay.
Because not surprisingly, we would watch these movies together and then I wouldn't watch them again, you know, as an adult. There'd be no need for me to rewatch Monsters, Inc. So I can often go into these movies with a bit of a blank slate, really. So I gave it an 8 because you were very fond of it and that therefore makes me very fond of the memories of it. But I think I'm going to go out on a bit of a limb here, and I do this quite often on our podcast, and I don't want to be too generous to all of these movies, but I think this is pretty close to being a perfect film.
Wow.
It's a really straightforward but interesting plot. It has a very convincing antagonist, protagonist. It has a perfect comic sidekick who has a love interest in this perfectly realized world, which is beautifully animated, and when it gets to the end of the movie, it's finished. It's a happy ending. It's a win.
Yeah,
I think for what it is, I think this is pretty close to being the perfect film. So I'm gonna go from my 8 to a 10. I cannot give it less than, I can't give it less than a 10 because, okay, it's for what it is within its own context, it's perfect. It doesn't do anything wrong. It's a 10.
So we've completely switched the score then.
So it still has an overall score of 9, but we've just swapped it around.
Fair enough, yeah. I do think if there's anything I take that you take out of this one, it should be that you should also watch Monsters University. Because I think if you think this one's perfect, I want to know what you thought about Monsters University.
Okay. You don't have to. We'll footnote that and I will watch Monsters University. What's your one-word review of Monsters, Inc.? Or is it Monsters Incorporated? I don't know.
This is going to be such a pointless word to describe the film, but it means a lot to me, so I'm going to go with the word colourful.
That's exactly the word that I was going to use. Genuinely.
Wait, really?
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly the word that I was going to use. And I bet your reasons for using it is the same as mine.
I just like the colour.
So I need to rethink my one word review because you've nicked it. So I'm going to go for reasons that we don't need to go into, I'm going to go with childhood.
Yeah, okay.
Because it is a perfect child-friendly movie, colourful childhood. We all had one of those, didn't we, eh? That's a different podcast. Else. That's a different podcast altogether. Okay, so we like Monsters, Inc. That's a pretty solid 9 out of 10. That would go quite high on our list.
It would, yeah.
So we need to choose the film for next time. And I'm stuck between two, really. Both of which would be massive and magnificent in every way. So I think that we're going to do... Finally, I think we should do Lord of the Rings. The Fellowship of the Ring.
Okay. Extended or theatrical?
Theatrical.
Okay.
Because it should be the experience that we had at the movies. Also the same year as well. This is also 2001. So in the same year that you and I were watching Monsters, Inc., we were watching Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. Same year.
Very similar movies. I was going to say my favourite bit is when Mike Wazowski tells Sully to fly, you fool.
So we kind of waited, I think, 15 episodes before we finally got to Lord of the Rings. So I hope you're not too disappointed with that.
Me or the audience?
You, I think.
No, I'm not disappointed at that. No, I think we were waiting for the right time. I think this might be it. Yeah.
Well, there's a couple of other Tolkien movies to come after this, so I think this is a good one. And so we're gonna go with Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, theatrical version. Probably gonna watch this in more than one sitting. To be fair, though, so you were incredibly young when I dragged you to watch this movie. Do you have any memory of this movie at all from that age?
I don't think I remember. I think I've definitely got a memory of seeing Return of the King at the cinema. But mm-hmm. for Fellowship, not so much. I think it was around that time that I just don't really remember them. But I have obviously watched it since. So it's kind of difficult for me to put a score to it. because I do like it, but I think there's one in particular that I prefer. But I think for what this one is, as the beginning to the trilogy, I think I know what my score should be.
Go on.
I think I'm going to, similar to Monsters, Inc., which is weird, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. And I think it's because there's a lot of elements in it that I really like, which I'll get more into, which aren't necessarily elements that I think are carried over into the other films. So I think it's very specific for that film that I like, that I'll give it that score, 8 out of 10.
Okay. I think that's fair. I think you have to think of the trilogy as a whole when you rate these movies, because, you know, they're obviously beloved and so on. And I mean, as throughout my childhood, I've read Lord of the Rings. So, you know, I had already cast this movie in my head 100 times. If I was making this movie in my childhood, I would have given the part of Aragorn to Harrison Ford, for example.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I had been waiting for this movie and I knew it was coming. So I'm going to cut a long story short and I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I think that was sort of the score that I almost gave it. So that makes sense, yeah.
Because I've given it 9 because I think it's amazing. But it's equally possible that I might think some of the other ones in the trilogy are more amazing. I don't know.
That's what it's like for me, but I have a reason as well, I think.
I should also say that even though I'm a huge fan of this movie, I really haven't watched it for a long time. And I really haven't been able to watch it for a long time because I know it so well that every time I put it on, I kind of lose interest. So I'm really interested in to see, you know, kind of almost forcing myself into rewatching this movie. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think admittedly that happened to me because the last time I watched Fellowship of the Ring was actually January, but I was watching the extended edition, and I think because I knew it so well and I knew what was going to be coming, I couldn't get into it either. So I'm quite interested to try the theatrical version and see how I get on with that. I will watch it, of course, for the podcast, but also because I want to watch it.
Yep. And then, so yeah, I just thought it was a good time to get into this movie. I think the world is now ready for Dean and Sam Benefit of Hindsight discussion on the 2001 Peter Jackson classic, The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring.
Could be a long episode. Maybe we should do an extended edition.
We should, yeah. Yeah.
Director's
and then cut. and then sort of every 5-10 years we can re-release them in higher quality.
Yeah. What a great idea.
Brilliant. What a brilliant idea. Okay, well, I think that just about wraps that up. Thanks very much for listening to us. I hope you've enjoyed what we said about Monsters, Inc., (Incorporated), (), if you're an American or North American. I don't know. Probably offended half our listeners there. So we do this at the end of every episode, but do you know what day it is today?
Isn't it Bring an Obscure Relative to Work Day?
It should be, but it isn't. But it should be that day every day, by the way. It is, in fact, the International Day of the Cat.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Which is good, because we like cats, right?
I'd say I love cats, yeah. I'd give it a 10 out of 10 now.
We're definitely, 8 out of 10 owners who expressed a preference said their cat preferred it. And on that note, let's say good evening. Happy International Cat Day. Happy International Bring an Obscure Relative to Work Day. It's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
Meow.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful? Or did they change history?